morning, good evening, good coding campers. It's Monday, and that means it's time for NFDN Radio, the show that helps developers find what they're looking for. Good code, good conversation, but most of all, good time. So here to bring us into the week is our host, Mike Benkovich.
Hey. And thank you, Eric, and I want to welcome everyone back to another week of MSDN Radio, the radio show where we put you in touch with the developers and the coders, get you into the conversation, find out what's going on. A lot of stuff going on this week. We just got back from Tech Ed last week. They had down in New Orleans quite the event going on. A lot of things were announced. A lot of things are new and rolling out. From the developer space, we had everything from the Azure upgrade to the .NET 4 running inside of version 1.2 of the tools for going out and building stuff, all the way out to the Expression Suite being announced. You can go out and today you can go out and download the Expression Suite 4 and have all those tools for working with some great new technologies and cool tools. I was able to be down there and had some fun seeing all of the different elements going on. One of the very cool things that we saw was the T-shirt cannon launching out to the audience, some great stuff. And with all this robotics and stuff going on, I was able to talk today's guest, Clint Ruckus, to be able to come on to the show with us. So we're going to spend today kind of diving into what robots are and how that all fits in. And I guess that I want to say welcome to Clint. Are you there, Clint?
Yep. Hey.
Hey, how's it going?
It's going good.
Well, welcome to the show. Are you recovering and getting back from the week in the conference?
Yeah. Actually, yesterday I played some kickball.
Oh. Well, it must have been actually sunny where you are.
Actually, this weekend in Seattle, it was sunny. It was quite nice. It was a nice, cool 75 degrees.
Wow. A little bit less than the 95-degree heat in the New Orleans.
Yeah. That was incredibly hot and humid.
It's a little bit different. I was walking from the bus or to the bus, and just my glasses are fogging up. I'm like, okay. And the windshield wiper is going, and there's no rain. It's like that's because of the condensation. It's not hot until it's the wet hot, right?
Yeah.
So you've been doing a lot of interesting things. You've been in a lot of different areas. You've been serving up the Corn Belt for a long time.
Yep.
One of the sites you were working on is Code for Fun. Tell me about that.
So Coding Fun is all about just doing fun, cool, interesting things with source code. Because everyone, when they think of programming, they think of, hey, I'm going to build a business site. I'm going to build a CRM system. Which, yes, that's what programming does, and programming does well. But you can also do some really cool, fun stuff. So about a month ago, we had a Silverlight MVP showed off how to do facial detection.
Facial detection?
Yes, in Silverlight. It's fully open source. He explains how he does it step by step, gives a real-time example that runs and along with the full source code, all under MSPL. And, that's what Coding for Fun does. We do some really interesting stuff. We give away the source code and basically it's like we want you to do something fun and cool with it.
And what's the link for that?
Coding4fun.com.
And you can include not just the examples of the, hey, here's a feature, but here's how it's actually put together?
Yeah, that's one of the core tenets is we'll show you how to do the hard stuff, how to do the interesting stuff. We typically gloss over how to, set up a project because that just adds more and more time and length to the article. We just dive straight into the hard stuff and move from there.
So your session that you did at Tech Ed was on how to, let's just put context. You built a T-shirt cannon.
A fully robotic T-shirt cannon that can drive, it can aim, it actually has two T-shirt barrels.
And those were not the PVC, and there was a reason for that?
So I found out PVC explodes at about 125 PSI.
How did you find out that it explodes at 120 PSI? People didn't
know. When I was at Maker Faire, people were complimenting the robotic or the cannons because they're, aircraft-grade aluminum. The welding is super nice, and everyone's like, well, why did you pick these? And my actual response was, because I had 2 weeks to build it. Mm-hmm. So I outsourced all the all the parts I just bought off the shelf, and then I kind of Frankensteined it into a physical robot.
Mm-hmm.
So I actually went to a company that made T-shirt cannons for sporting events and bought them there, slightly modified for my purpose. And then I found out, like, PVC explodes, and it makes sense because it's not meant to hold that kind of pressure. But, I mean, I don't want, you know, shrapnel flying all over. So ours can easily go up to over 300 PSI without even flinching.
That's pretty cool. I was just, you know, it's like they talk about bridges, and you see a bridge that says the maximum capacity is 800 pounds or 80,000 tons or whatever, and you wonder how do they figure out how much they can hold. And back in engineering school, they'd say, well, you just drive progressively heavier trucks over it until it breaks, and you weigh that last one.
So that's what I was wondering about the simulations. You can actually figure that kind of stuff out. And then also, a lot of it's material.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, figure out what's the weakest point, or what's the maximum load capacity of, like, a bolt that could be structurally important, and that could become one of the key limiting factors.
Now, you did a blog post, too, on how you built the cannon, right?
Yeah, so right now on Coding for Fun, we're going through and saying, this is how we built this part, this is how we built this part. So we about a month ago, I think, I put up a blog post of all the physical hardware and where I bought it, why it was purchased, and what it does. Now, you don't have to pick what I picked, but there are key reasons why the hardware I picked is what is on the robot, and that primarily is because we had 2 weeks to build the entire robot, ship it down.
Right.
I went with stuff I knew how it would work, how it would react. I knew the little nuances of it, so if something were to happen, I could fix it.
That's pretty cool. So tell me about the story. How did you happen to build this T-shirt cannon? Where did that where did the start of that come from?
So about 2 weeks before Mix, I'm playing, you know, a video game at home. It's 8 p.m., and I see an email from Scott Guthrie, a VP at Microsoft, and it says, basically, I want you to build a T-shirt cannon for Mix. And on it, it's like CC'd my boss, my boss's boss, my boss's boss's boss. And, you know, at that point, it's an email that I'm just going to let them handle, because I don't want to, you know, say, yeah, I'll do it. And then they're like, why did you do that?
Mm-hmm.
So I just, you know, let them go. And then an hour later, I check my email again, and it's pretty much, hey, Clint, you're building a T-shirt cannon.
So then engineering starts at that point?
Then it starts, you know, the panic attacks start kicking in, because most of the parts to do this, the lead time is about a month to get the physical parts. So I am extremely constrained on what I can buy and what I can do. So I had to, you know, do some wheeling and dealing and begging to say, hey, can you ship this part out to me the following day?
Mm-hmm.
And then a lot of our design decisions were overkill. So it was us deciding on parts based on features that we weren't even fully sure if we could pull off, based on the current state of the tooling and the firmware on the phone, because we were running on alpha firmware and alpha phone tools. The phone tools weren't even released yet at this point.
Now, you're using the phone as the controller for your T-shirt, okay?
Yes.
And so that's all built out in Silverlight using the build of the tools and everything else, right?
Yes.
Because you showed that off. You showed actually how you, you know, clicked on it, and then you clicked on another button, and all of a sudden you're driving a little race car or a little, you know.
Yeah, so that was a big thing we showed off at Tech Ready was, so we went from a $10,000 robot to a $15 Radio Shack robot, or I'm sorry, remote control car.
Yeah.
And it's you're running the same exact code on the phone. All we did was we switched from one virtual directory on our server to a different virtual directory, and we used, I think it's about a $75 fidget 1616 board, you know, soldered up the remote control to the remote control car, to the 1616, and it just worked. And that's actually an article we did on Coding for Fun a while back. Mm-hmm. I've been doing Coding for Fun for like 5 years, and I find it really funny now where I'll need some bit of code, mm-hmm. and I end up searching for it, using Bing, and the next thing I know, it's on Coding for Fun.
That kind of speaks to the idea that what you do, you enjoy.
Yeah, and just because it's code that's meant, you know, just do something wild and crazy doesn't mean you can't, it's not production ready also. I mean, most of the code we do is done by, you know, MVPs, community members that know how to architect and build out these style applications.
Cool. So I've got to ask the question. You've got the t-shirt cannon, you've got the facial recognition software. Where did those two come together? Like the t-shirt cannon and someone?
So what I actually wanted to do, and actually I wanted to do this before I got tasked with the t-shirt cannon, was build I have a Nerf Vulcan cannon.
Mm-hmm.
So it's just, you know, it can pelt out Nerf bullets just by, you know, squeezing the trigger.
Mm-hmm.
And I actually wanted to do motion control on that. So mm-hmm. when someone would enter my office,
mm-hmm.
It would just start tracking them, and if they were there for like 30 seconds, it would just start shooting them.
Uh-huh.
However, Make Magazine actually just did something, I think, believe, like using the Nerf Vulcan cannon, I think about two weeks ago.
Mm-hmm.
So it kind of defeats the purpose now because someone else did it.
Mm-hmm.
But we've also done motion tracking in the past on Coding for Fun also.
Mm-hmm. What I'd love to see is you got a picture of the audience, and it, you know, zooms around. You find the picture of someone, and then you say launch, and it goes right to them.
Well, there was actually quite a bit of cool stuff we wanted to do on the robot, but part of it was cost, part of it was time.
Yeah, there's only so much time to be able to. But you know, 2 weeks to go out and build all this, and then you did the.
It wasn't just building one robot. It was actually building two robots.
Uh-huh.
Because we needed to, in case anything bad happened with the one robot, we had a fallback.
Right, but the fallback was a copy of the first one. Or was
they're exact clones.
Yeah, yeah. So, but you did the user interface for the phone to be able to drive that controller, and then you did a session at TechEd that built that out in about an hour. Was that enough time?
It was a 75-minute session. Our intro, you know, to chatting, talking about the overview of it took 10 minutes, and we actually had about 10 minutes left, so we coded up the entire thing at figure in 50 minutes. But the first time when we were trial running this, it took us 2.5 hours.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, we practiced, so we knew exactly how to code up everything. We did use a couple snippets, which helped speed stuff up.
That helps.
But it was, I mean, we covered, you know, accelerometer, networking. We talked about how to skin stuff. We talked about, how to do different style interfaces in Silverlight for the phone. So we opted for a control style-based versus a page-based approach.
Mm-hmm.
And those were things that, you know, probably certain people hadn't been exposed to. So our ultimate goal was to improve people's knowledge on that stuff and show them also some cool, interesting tricks that we used to improve the reliability of our robot.
Mm-hmm.
So one example of this would be we created an accelerometer user control that we basically replaced the visibility property. And I mean, we still kept the original base functionality of that, but based on that, we would turn on and off the accelerometer that would be built into this. So then our drive control and our aim control inherited off of this. So by default, we had this hook into an accelerometer because of that.
So that all just kind of comes together.
Yeah, and I mean, it's showing off, you know, here's how you do some, you know, awesome coding practices that are at the root of object-oriented programming, and you can extend those into doing some really powerful tricks with Silverlight.
So the website to get all that information is code, the number four, fun.
Coding.
Oh, I got the wrong URL there. I got coding for fun. I'll have to fix it. And people can follow you on Twitter at Clint Ruckus too, right?
Yes.
So that's how I found out, you know, where you're going to be and what's going on. Now, we do have some questions in the queue from our studio audience here. And if you want to participate in the show, you do need to register for the show. We do this every Monday at the same time. But when you're in, just go ahead and type in your question Q&A panel, and then we'll pull you up. Just press the star 8, and then I know that your question is ready to be asked. And we've got Glenn in St. Paul, Minnesota here, who has a question for you, Glenn.
Okay. Hi, Clint. Nice to talk with you. And thanks for being on the show.
No worries. Thank you for having me.
No problem. I'm impressed with your variety of interesting ways to find ideas to develop and things. How do you find most of your ideas in terms of just coming up with, you know, the coding for fun ideas versus most people getting stuck in the rut?
So for coding for fun, we actually have it's me, my manager Dan Fernandez. We have some community members we have a giant list of ideas. Sometimes some of them are just so out there that we can't do them. But coding for fun is heavily community driven, so it's not just me writing the articles.
Yeah.
So what we'll do is we'll try to find the correct people to write the articles, or if someone's done something really cool, we'll track that person down and say, hey, can you write us an article that explains what you did? Part of it is, you know, just us brainstorming different ideas. So an upcoming series that we're going to do is called what's the PR way to put this? I'm just going to call it Improve Your Office. So the entire idea is you'll have $100 to improve your office. Anyway, through source code, you can mix hardware and software. You can just do it pure software-wise. So for me, my biggest gripe is opening and closing my office door when I want to play music or I have to take a phone call based on how my office layout is. Yes, I am truly that lazy that I don't want to open and close my door or walk around my desk. So I'm trying to figure out how I can do this with $100. Now, the reason why I have a $100 cap is because then anyone can do it.
Mm-hmm.
It's not saying, oh, well, you work at Microsoft, so you're going to spend $5,000 on doing this. Well, and yes, I have actually spent my own money doing projects. Only recently have I found Microsoft to help supplement some of my crazy ideas. But with that $100 cap, then it's like, okay, it makes you think how to do it a lot more creatively and with off-the-shelf parts.
That would be good for all of us to learn as a whole, because we tend to get stuck in those ruts and not necessarily think as creatively as we could.
Well, I mean, when I do have community members and stuff, I always want them to do something that they like. I'm not going to say, hey, go do motion tracking when they have no clue on how to do motion tracking, because then they're not going to like it. Like, for me, I really like doing hardware-software mashups or just some random bleeding edge technology. So for me, I know what I like, and I typically try to gravitate toward those projects. Other people like other projects, so we help them do those projects. If you're interested in doing a coding for fun project, we're always looking for new authors. So if you'd like, you can email me, Clint.Ruckus, RUTKAS @Microsoft.com. And I'd love to chit-chat some ideas with you.
Very good. Sounds like a plan.
Yeah. So. It seems like sometimes if you've got a reason to do a project, that it will get you started with the technology, and then you come up with other ideas.
Yeah.
Like, for instance, up here in Minnesota, there's a lot of deer, and people tend to figure out how can we get rid of the deer. Someone in St. Louis, I think it was called the Water Hobo.
Yeah, the Water Hobo.
You familiar with that?
Yeah, Tim Higgins.
That was if you haven't seen the video, but basically what he did was he wired in the high-pressure sprinkler system to shoot at things.
It wasn't high pressure. It couldn't hurt anyone. It was just like, you know, you got squirted with a hose.
Right. But once you start mixing liquid with hardware with software, ooh, now that's a mashup.
There you go. And I could use that with my dog.
So, like, for me, what really actually ended up getting me hired on at Microsoft was I built a computer-controlled disco dance floor.
Mm-hmm.
Now, my end goal was to actually help me meet more girls. And then at the same time, I also said, hey, okay, on this project, I want to learn threading.
Right.
So I went out and, you know, figured out all the hardware I needed, all the software, how to properly construct it, how to actually do surface soldering. So I set up key tenets, and because it was something I wanted to do, mm-hmm. I progressively learned more and more and more on how to do it properly. Rather than if someone assigns you something, then, you know, it typically the project never finishes or just kind of dies on the vine.
So you're big on helping or promoting people to get into this.
Yeah.
You were in the academic space for a while and helping students get into that. You also did another device you built for PDC. I think you called it the Drink Tender?
Drink Tender, yes. So this was what I showed off at PDC,
right?
Was that was probably like the version 3. I'm going to call it like version 3.5.
So for the people that don't know what a drink tender would be, can you give a description of what it does?
So a drink tender is my automated bartender. So you basically go up to it and you say, I want, you know, a vodka tonic or, you know, rum and coke or Long Island iced tea, and it pours it.
It knows how to do it.
It automatically knows how to do it. It has a database. So going back to me always wanting to learn new stuff, so version 3.5, I pretty much rewrote the entire UI and a large sum of the back end to use Link to SQL, and along with WPF, and it all it's very heavy touch-based. Now, touch-based was something that was always part of the plan, but because it's WPF, it made life a lot easier to be able to do cool effects and whatnot. Now, building that out, I mean, you have to figure, well, how do I pour out drinks?
Mm-hmm.
How do I keep my electronics safe around liquid? How do I not blow up my laptop?
Right.
And the first version, I actually did blow up a laptop for Maker Faire.
Ooh.
And what was even more bad was this was before I worked at Microsoft, so I didn't have someone to help replace my laptop. So, I mean, those are all very, you know, things that now because I have those experiences, I know how to deal with them.
Mm-hmm.
But the cool thing with Drink Tender was that you told it what liquids it currently had,
mm-hmm.
and then it would only display drinks that it could make. So let's say if it didn't have, let's say gin, it wouldn't show you how to make a gin and tonic.
Right. So it was smart about being able to tell. You had sensors for remaining amounts and all kinds of interesting things like that.
No, I didn't actually have sensors for remaining amounts. You can actually calculate that.
Based on
those were that was one of those features that I could have added in, but I never had time.
Mm-hmm. Well, maybe the next version will have that, right?
Yeah. I mean, it's one of those projects that it works. It works well. I actually did a Iron Bartender contest at PDC. I lost because, in my opinion, the real bartender cheated.
Mm.
But, you know, it was just a fun, crazy project that we did and showed off. And it showed, like, hey, you can do really cool stuff with source code. Once again, going back to it, it doesn't have to be just for business.
It can be in a lot of different areas.
Yeah, and actually another interesting thing now that I think about it for the Drink Tender was it actually uses a very sophisticated queuing system to pour the drinks.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the reason why is, like a Long Island iced tea, you pour like 4 drinks at the same time, and then you do a splash of Coke. And that is how you're supposed to pour that drink. So basically you're going from an asynchronous process
mm-hmm.
to a synchronous process. So I have to keep track of all those asynchronous threads and then know when they're all done and then fire off the the last thread. Now, right now, the system isn't that queuing system isn't totally abstracted out, so it could be very generic. But with a small amount of work, it could be, and that could be something useful to a separate application, not just the bartender. So you develop real useful technology doing some of these coding projects that aren't just, you know, for fun.
Now, you're taking your coding for fun, and you've taken it to Channel 9. So you're on Channel 9.msdn.com, right?
I am part of that team, yes.
Yeah. So what's new on Channel 9, and how, I mean, how can people find, you know, the stuff that you've done? I suppose they can search on the different tags and whatnot.
Yeah, so most of my time is dedicated toward coding for fun, however, and I also do some development on Channel 9. But what's new on Channel 9 is we actually did a lot of Office content recently because Office just launched. Shortly, in about an hour, we're going to be probably putting up some stuff for E3 with now I believe it's called Kinect, which was formerly known as Project Natal, so the motion tracking system
for Xbox. Right.
We also have just, you know, Channel 9 is all about just doing, bridging the, creating a transparency between our developers and the developers in the real world. So we'll go and interview, like, Mark Rusinovich about the Windows 7 kernel when Windows 7 is, like, pre-beta, and talk about what happened, why certain changes happened. Or we'll talk to, let's say, Eric Meyer about Link to SQL. Or, no, he didn't do Link to SQL. The Reactive Framework. And so you get a better understanding of why these systems are designed like they are.
Right.
Because Microsoft, we build the platform. We build the tools to help build other applications. So there's not, you know, everyone's like, oh, well, you guys have like 15 different ways to talk to a database. That's true. But the reason why we have that is because one system does not fit everything.
Yeah.
One system may be overkill 100% for a certain application, while a different application, it's perfect.
Right. Well, and trying to help people understand how they can explore the possible, see what they can do. I mean, you think about the last 6 months. We've released Windows 7, Server R2, Azure. We've got technologies for, like, functional programming, Silverlight, .NET 4.
Yeah. We've got SQL Server 2008 R2.
Visual Studio, Office, Expression
.NET 4.0, Silverlight 4, WP7, tools. So, yeah, and it goes on and on and on and on and on.
And on and on.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, that's why we do MSDN events, too, and the webcast series and all of those other things, because it does give you a glimpse of what's possible, and you can decide, hey, this is something to dive in deeper.
Yeah, and then what's really nice, in my opinion, with Microsoft tools is you can leverage what you learn on one, let's say, Windows Phone 7, and because that's Silverlight 3, I call it Silverlight 3 Plus.
Right.
I mean, those skills instantly pretty much translate to the web, and then you get to, you know, just there's so much stuff that cross-translates, and because it's .NET under the hood, the same skill sets that you learn on Silverlight then helps you in ASP.NET MVC, which can help you do WPF, WCF, and
right.
I'm just throwing out acronyms like left and right.
And the TLAs. You really drive the TLA stuff. I'm all about that. Oh, this has been fun. There's a question in the queue from someone who wasn't able to dial in, and they're saying, how do you make sure that your robot idea is feasible? We only have just a minute left. Can you answer that?
How I make sure it's feasible. Typically, you know, you learn from experience. It's kind of like how Adam Savage from the Mythbusters said, like, the more you do stuff, the more crazy ideas you know instantly if it will work or not work.
Right.
Part of it is just research. I love doing research to figure out the proper parts and all that stuff. The mixer robot, the only reason why we managed to pull that off in time was because I've built other robots that gave me an idea of the parts to order. If I had to do, like, or the drink tender, I would spend weeks before I would order anything because I knew I wanted to order the correct parts the first time. And even then, I would order maybe one part to mm-hmm. verify that is the proper part before I order 50 of them.
Mm-hmm. So what I'm hearing you say is just email clint.ruckus@microsoft.com and you would tell us.
if I know what they want, I may already know of a part.
Yeah.
I also leverage, you know, people that I know. So, like, my father is a tool and die maker.
Right.
So if it's something very outlandish, I'll ask him and go, like, hey, Pops, I need to do this. How can I do it safely? Like, a key thing is for me, I don't want to get hurt. I don't want to hurt anyone. So how can I do this crazy idea without having, you know, something shoot, you know, a robot yeah. or a T-shirt in someone's face?
Right. Well, you don't want to have that horror case of, well, let's see, we shoot the cannon, hit someone in the back of the head, knock them out, and then, ouch.
Or, I mean, a big thing for me is, like, wiring and electricity mm-hmm. is because, like, the T-shirt robot runs at extremely high voltage, but it runs at 24 volts,
mm-hmm.
and it has, I think, 17 amp hours
mm-hmm.
or battery power. So it's producing amperage that can kill you.
Yeah.
So it's how do I wire this so, A, it doesn't destroy all the electronics, and how does it just, you know, how do I wire it so it works?
Yeah.
But, I mean, long story short, a lot of it's research, a lot of it's asking questions.
That's a good answer. Hey, I hate to say it, but, you know, our time has gone by pretty quick here, and we're going to need to wrap up. But we'd love to have you come back, Quinn.
Sure, I'd love to. And then, if, like I said, if anyone has questions, please email me, Twitter, you know.
Clint,
go to
cutting@microsoft.com.
Yeah, and if you guys want to do Cutting Fun articles, please email me, you know, pitch me your idea. I don't want, you know, you guys to do your articles and then go, hey, can you publish this? And I'm like, sorry, it's, you know, some idea that I just don't like.
Right.
So I'd much rather let's chit-chat before you start going crazy. But if you want to go crazy, go nuts, put it on your blog, and then if it's cool, I'll link to it then.
Sounds really good. All right, well, we appreciate you coming on. Next week we've got Mark Wilson Thomas coming on. He's going to talk about the Visual Studio, the new CIDR editor for working with XAML and all of the cool stuff you can do with Silverlight and with WPF, and he's going to probably ask a lot of questions and look for audience feedback. The link to that will be http://bit.ly/msdnradio-12, and we're going to have some fun with this. I hope you guys have a great weekend. And, again, thank you for coming on, Clint. We'll talk to you next week.
So that's it for this Monday. Go to msdnradio.com and click the registration link if you want to participate in the next show. Until then, happy coding.